I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Today we have a roll call.
That's the same?
Yes.
Councilmember Deedy?
Here.
Councilmember Oglesby?
Here.
Councilmember Edelman?
Here.
Councilmember Stout?
Here.
Councilmember Wisnowski?
Here.
Okay, I think that I'm just going to let Barbara and Kate go ahead with her report on
Just turn the back.
The back. Come back. Oh, okay. Push it and hold it in for a few. Oh, no, it is on.
It's on. It was on. Well, this wasn't. Yeah, this is. It's red, so this window means it's on. Right?
No, it's got to be blue.
This one's red.
This one's blue.
It's blue there, red there, but she doesn't have the blue on it.
All right, use this one.
Okay. Well, yeah.
That's this one.
So, okay, so we, there are two sections in the Black Diamond Municipal Code that we're going to talk about tonight. One of them is 1850, and that's a chapter that's titled Accessory Uses and Structures. And 1856 is accessory dwelling units. So what these two chapters do is they contain the provisions to allow or permit somebody to the accessory use and structure is, say, to build a garage or a tennis court or something like that. The accessory use or structure is something that you would and expect that a person would want to accompany their residence. Typical things that people, and sometimes not so typical, and this chapter also is discussing like home occupations and things like that. The 1856 is a specific type. It focuses on a specific type of accessory structure, and that's an accessory dwelling unit. So it has its own chapter, although these two chapters need to work together, and of course they need to work with the overall code and the zoning standards for the zoning district. So the what started all of this was that we had in the Community Development Department been experiencing problems with people coming in and wanting to build an accessory dwelling unit on top of an existing garage. So the code that we work with would not allow people that had a single-story home to do that because it had this height restriction that said, you know, it could be 26 feet or the height of the primary structure, whichever is less. So that was really disallowing and actually penalizing but treating people differently. If they had a two-story home, they could do it. If they had a one-story home, they couldn't do it. And so that's what really spurred this whole proposed revision is trying to accommodate and facilitate people who wanted to have an accessory dwelling unit on their top of their garage. So we began. And I've got a memo here that really gives the major changes. But we began with that chapter 1850, which is the accessory uses and structures. And I've got a sample of the code that went through the Planning Commission and through a public hearing. The black text is the text that exists in the code right now. The underlying blue text is stuff that we've added, we're proposing to add. And then the red cross out would be stuff that we would eliminate. And essentially, with 1850, with the accessory uses and structures, like I said, the one thing was the height, to eliminate that height problem. but also we added some language for, we didn't have anything that said that to have an accessory use or a structure, you have to first establish the primary use. So, you know, if somebody wanted to come in and build their garage and they didn't have a house yet, we would permit that. But then what happens sometimes is the garage turns into the house. So it's probably, in my mind, a good practice to say, yes, you have to establish the primary use and structure first, and then we'll go in and permit the other things that you want. So we did add that. It was really interesting when we went through 1850, we talked a lot about visual compatibility with the surrounding structures. So we did add language for that. Although when we got to the accessory dwelling unit discussion, that sort of changed, and all of a sudden, so we, one of the things that I'd like for us to talk about in terms of the key concepts tonight on these is whether, how important we think visual compatibility and aesthetic is, and should we be trying to regulate that. That's one key point that I'd like for us to talk about, and it goes with both chapters. The other thing that we did in 1850 and the accessory structures is we added how do you measure the height, because we have a height restriction, and we didn't tell people how we were going to measure the height. So that was confusing, and we got calls about that all the time. The other thing is we added a much more comprehensive list of the kind, like I said, the kinds of accessory uses that, like home occupations, it wasn't even mentioned in here. There were a lot of things that people ask, what do I need a permit to do this? And they do, but we didn't discuss it in our code. So and then we just wanted to make the uses and structures in the commercial and industrial zone, where you, if it's a mixed use development, which is what we're encouraging, you would anticipate that some of those residential accessory uses and structures would be desired in a mixed use where you have, but the way the code currently reads, they really aren't. They're very limited. If you have a commercial zoned area or an industrial zoned area, you're really limited right now on the types of accessory uses and structures you can build, which isn't very consistent with our overall concept of really trying to encourage the mixed-use development for, you know, the walkability and all of that stuff. Those were the key changes in 1850, and I've included this code, although I didn't really expect that, you know, you haven't read it yet, didn't have any expectation that we would go through it, because I'd kind of like to keep this workshop at the higher level discussion, and then have you, you know, kind of read through this, and then you would be going into a regular council session with the ordinance package and the language to really look at and then have public hearing on. So you kind of flip through that, and then you go to Clifford, who has the problem with his accessory structure for the doghouse being bigger, and this is like this whole visual compatibility and how far do we want to take this thing. So with 1856, again, the code is there. The major changes, and this is where we're going to get into, I think, a lot more of the high-level discussion that's very important, is the Planning Commission recommended this code the way that you have it, and those changes are, we added an intent statement, which is pretty harmless, but it's a good idea to have an intent statement that actually explains to people what our goals are for an ADU. We refined the definitions, because an accessory dwelling unit can be several different things. And we wanted to make sure that people understood, this page is a little graphic. You can have an attached or a detached accessory dwelling unit. And so we wanted to make sure that we had those definitions. And what did we mean? An attached is going to be an accessory dwelling unit that, just like it sounds, it's attached. It could be within maybe the basement's converted or the attic is converted or maybe, you know, a floor is converted to be a separate dwelling unit. It could be that they've converted their attached garage into an apartment. So that's what we mean when we talk about attached. And then detached, just like it sounds, could be converting a separate standalone garage into a dwelling unit or building new construction. So
how do we figure out that gray line between what's a added on accessory dwelling unit and an addition?
What we did with that is to talk about it in the terms of new construction. So we keep, and this is where we, if you turn to 1856-030, where we talk about the performance standards, this is a high point that we need to talk about, the number. We differentiate between that because we say that the attached is going to be allowed within the existing footprint of the structure, and that it shouldn't result in new construction. So in other words, if you have someone that comes in and they have a plan set for an addition to their home, it's going to be attached to their home, and it's new construction and they want to turn it into an accessory, I mean, that's where we look at it.
What
is
if it's
it new
just
or
like
is
adding
it
on a new master suite? I mean, that's...
If it's new construction, then we count that as one ADU, one of their two. So.
So that would mean any addition.
So it has to be separate. Just adding on a master suite to the house is just enlarging the house.
Right.
So the ADU is a separate standalone.
So there's no access between the two?
There has to be a separate access on an ADU. Mm-hmm. There has to be. It has to have its own access, its own door. It has to have its own living. It has to be livable. So it's got to have, you know, kitchen, bathroom, sanitation. So
someone just adding on a master bathroom wouldn't qualify as an ADU?
No. Yeah, so the addition is that, you know, they're adding on a space that is self-contained for habitation.
Okay. So it's got
with its own
kitchen
entrance.
Facilities
yes.
to be an ADU.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like up at the new homes that Lennar just had their open house, and they have a, you know, quote-unquote mother-in-law area, but they do not have a cooktop.
Right.
And so by not having the cooktop, they don't have an official kitchen.
Right.
And even though it's got its own entry, it's still not included as an ADU. If they put the cooktop in,
then it's an
ADU.
Yeah.
And then it would be an attack. So when they come in to do that remodel or that, you know,
upgrade,
then we're going to say, okay, well, this is now an ADU. But
they're
it's
going to us when they put a cooktop in.
But at that point, I suspect that'll all come in as the master plan. When they come in for the plan for that house, for that owner, it'll all happen then.
Yeah.
No, what I'm thinking is so the difference between, so if you wanted to get around the ADU, I'm always thinking about, you know, connections, right? That's what I do. So if you wanted to get around the ADU part, you build the addition without a 220 circuit for a kitchen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then later put in the 220 circuit and don't tell anybody about it.
That's right. Yeah, people could do that.
But that the one at 10 Trails had a washer and dryer. It had 220.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah. But it didn't qualify
because there was
it didn't
kitchen.
Have a cooktop.
Because, I mean, cooktops are easy to put in, right? I mean, you could leave the space for it.
Yeah. I mean, and people will find ways to get around.
Right.
They will.
Well, and I think what we need to do is make sure that we're not pushing people that are just adding on an addition to make a new master suite, which may have its own entrance, right? I mean, a lot of people put a big sliding glass door on a new master bedroom, right, to look out on a little patio or something like that, right? So I think we need to make sure that we're not being ambiguous into what an ADU is and what an addition is, right?
So,
we need to figure out a way to...
So ADU costs more money? So why do we care?
Oh, that's a good question. It wouldn't cost more money to permit. That's one of the things, is that it's based on valuation. The process is a little different. So when someone comes in to do addition, it's a type 1 process. It's a ministerial decision. The ADU is a type 2 process. It's still an administrative decision, but there's a requirement that that there's a comment period so that people that live around it can look at the plans and weigh in if they think that.
So if I don't put a cooktop in, my neighbors get to talk. Or no, if I don't put a cooktop in, I don't have to hear from my neighbors about what they think about my addition. Right. But if I put a cooktop in, then they get to chime in.
So I don't kind of understand. So let's say I'm building a house today.
Okay.
And my upstairs has a kitchen, living room, dining room, the whole nine yards.
Right.
And my daylight basement has exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Kitchen, everything.
You have potentially, you could rent out both of those spaces.
Right.
Inside.
But I didn't have to, but.
But you didn't go through a permit process.
Well, that's because it's.
Yeah, you did. But when you.
Well, it's all new instead of.
It was okay through the city at that time that you can have two living areas.
That's your dad's house.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So separate entrances.
So what you built was a
single.
Kind of.
Well, except for it's a split level, probably. In there.
No, it's not. It's a two-level.
Oh, it's not?
It's two-level.
But it was all permitted through the city when
right.
they built
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So it's whatever was...
So I'm just trying to understand the difference of what people are asking. If it's allowed today to do what my parents did, what are people asking then, really, right now, that they can't do? I mean, just convert a garage or like,
well,
let's just say at my house...
Yeah.
is a three-story. The middle level has all your things, your kitchen and everything. The basement, I could put a kitchen in. But now what you're saying is I need to come to the city and say I want to put a kitchen in.
Right.
Because it has a separate entrance. And wait, that would be then...
Because you would be doing an ADU in the existing footprint. Yeah. Yeah, so back to the... Okay, so what you described sounds to me like you got... permitted to build a duplex. Now let's just say you've got this one roof structure that has your living residence, potentially a residence you could rent out. It's livable, and maybe you could add another one. And what if you wanted to build a detached structure? What if you wanted to build like a mother-in-law on there? I mean, you would come in. To do
right,
that,
because mm-hmm. technically, to me, then you're building another house
right.
on your property.
That
whether it be smaller than the house you've already built, or if you have a room, you build a bigger house, or you build on a garage that's detached from the home, and you build another level up, right? Or
right. So it's counting. There's a couple of things here. The idea that we're creating a mechanism for people to do infill and to provide affordable housing units. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting, your case, because right now we only permit one accessory dwelling unit per lot. In discussing this with the Planning Commission and through the public hearing and the public comment we had, people were coming and describing similar to what you have. And so the Planning Commission in this draft said, well, you know what? We really don't have a problem with a basement that's a living space, the main floor that's the living space, and maybe a part of the attic that's a living space. It's all within that same existing construction footprint. It doesn't impact anybody outside. We could go with that, and then we could also allow one standalone detached, the construction of one standalone detached structure. So that's a big thing that we need to talk about. And the other thing that we eliminated was the requirement that one of those structures be owner occupied.
You eliminated it?
Eliminated it. Yeah. So the aesthetic incompatibility, the number of allowed, the owner-occupant, those are the things that we kind of need to touch base on how and in this workshop. I was hoping that we could really get, you know, that, because those are major changes. Now, I will say that, and then the other major change is we increased the size from 800 to 1,000 for those detached, those new construction.
And that makes sense.
Yeah. So,
Do we have anything? So we talk about, do we have anything that defines size of a primary unit?
No.
Because what I'm wondering is, right, what if someone wants to do a cluster instead of a big house and a little house?
Well, we have cluster development provision.
Right, but does that cover cluster of small units?
It could.
Okay.
Yeah, it could.
Okay. And so if someone wanted to come in and put in a couple tiny houses,
yep.
Would that cover that?
Yes, okay. Yes, and that code provision would cover that, and it's kind of like has to be done through, you've got to do a site plan,
right.
You know, and that sort of thing. The whole idea behind this ADU is that it's supposed to not be cost prohibitive.
Right.
So that someone could come in and they could, you know, apply for a permit and they wouldn't have to go through a big expensive process and site planning and all that stuff.
Well, we also need to streamline the process that any citizen can walk in off the street and be able to manage the process without throwing up their hands. And this happened to a council member's wife in Redmond. Mm-hmm. They wanted to build an ADU in there. And, you know, Redmond's got humongous big lots.
Yeah.
So they were going to build a 1,000-square-foot ADU in their backyard for their son, daughter-in-law, and new grandbaby. And if it hadn't been for the fact that Hank was on the council and went and helped work through the system, she was ready to throw up her hands.
Yeah.
So we need to make it, because the idea is to help people get into some kind of affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I understand that, and I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with With three on there. I understand having an ADU contained within the footprint of your house. Personally, I think you ought to be living there, and you rent out your basement, say. I can understand having the mother-in-law apartment above the two-car garage. I don't have a problem with that. But to have a three-level house and each one be a self-contained ADU without owner occupancy, why do we want to do that?
Well,
I mean, I understand this is what the Planning Commission is recommending.
Yeah.
I haven't heard a reasonable answer on why.
So then this brings you back to all the people that are doing Airbnbs, B&Bs,
right.
And renting, and the city has no idea that those are happening.
Right.
So where do we get into policing all that?
Right.
You know, doing all the policy and making sure that.
Yeah. So we didn't talk about that, but where we started was with the one. And then, like I said, we had Sam Pace give us testimony, and we had several people that came up and they spoke about how, you know, this is a very subjective thing. I mean, it's in their mind, it's like it should be more flexible than it is now. And they felt that, for example, and this is the one that I thought that I felt I could really understand, is that you're living in your house, you need to bring a family member into the house, and they want to have their own space, their own, so you've got an ADU inside the house, you're living there. Well, what if this person is Alzheimer's or something? Well, then guess what? You really need to, it would be great to have a caretaker. So you maybe could build an accessory dwelling unit and rent that out, and some kind, and then you have someone that can actually, when you go to work, you've got someone right there on the property. That made sense to me for two.
For a separate living area for the person, for the caretaker and the person who.
Yeah, I mean that was one example that was given to justify more than one.
Okay, but that justifies two.
Yeah. So I mean, really, in the course of the conversation, it just was why do we care? How can we regulate what goes inside people's homes anyway?
Well, that's
kind
true.
Of a discussion.
When you don't want them.
Yeah.
You don't want to be doing that.
Yeah.
Well, and I think we have We have other regulations on setbacks and,
yeah,
and stuff like that, right? So it's not like we're going to have somebody who's got a house and then four different ADUs, right?
No, because this code would only allow the one detached.
Right.
It's just that what goes on inside the existing footprint of the house, whether it's, you know, three, it was kind of a, we
long
don't
as
think
not
that
a
that impacts.
Safety hazard, really none of our business.
I don't, but I am really more conservative than the Planning Commission's recommendation, and I can understand the two.
Bob.
Go out and help me.
I agree with Janie that two is.
Does the code address parking?
Yeah, it was another thing, and this is really interesting. So we almost, we have one parking space per ADU in addition to the requirement that we have in our code for the primary. Yeah. Now, the Washington legislature is picking up bills for ADUs. ADUs are the hot topic right now because of the housing shortage. And so in this is something that Sam Pace brought in, and he said this is a bill that's probably, it's got a lot of traction. And the recommendation that the bill is eliminating parking, and it's allowing for more than one, and it's, you know, it's doing many of the things that we're talking about here. But in the end, the Planning Commission did discuss the problems that people have in neighborhoods where they have eliminated the parking provision, and that it is, it's yes. I mean, here's the two sides. By requiring one parking space per ADU, sometimes you make it impossible to fit everything on the lot.
When we built our kind of smallish house in our neighborhood, we were required to have four off-street parking places for our little 1,400 square foot house. Mm-hmm. One in the garage, two in the driveway, and one to the side of the house.
Oh.
And so, I mean, that was in 1994, but that was an expectation,
yeah,
for those properties that we would not be parking on the street all the time.
Was that part of your homeowners?
No.
That was part of the code?
Part of the permit process for our little development, which was kind of a lower income self-help housing group.
Oh, okay.
So there are 28 houses down there that built under those conditions.
Now, something else to keep in mind when you start talking about the state legislature,
yeah,
and the actions that they're taking, they're looking at Seattle.
Right.
They are looking at, yep, urban areas that they are trying to reduce the amount of
right
cars being parked anywhere.
Right.
You know, I mean, I had a sister that lived in Seattle for 30 years in apartments. She always parked half a dozen blocks away from wherever her apartment was because there was never parking available at the apartments. It was,
yeah,
always on street parking.
Yep.
So we need to look at, we're still suburban / rural.
Yep.
And I don't think we need to make some provisions for parking.
Yeah.
People have to drive to their jobs.
Yep.
They probably need two cars.
Yeah.
You know. And
yeah,
so I think we need to be aware of that when,
yeah,
we're doing this planning. I don't want us to fall into the trap of what Seattle is doing.
Yeah.
Because that's not conducive to our citizenry at all.
Well, we don't have the public transit.
We don't have the
infrastructure,
no,
right?
No,
I mean,
no,
you could live in Seattle without a car, right?
Oh, yeah.
If you lived
in
Seattle, right? I mean, if you live,
sure,
any major city mostly, you can live in the
you
city.
You could live on the east side. You could live,
right,
in Bellevue and still be just fine.
Right. But here, you can't. I mean,
we
got one bus line that comes out here, right? So.
Yeah, so we did keep the parking in the parking requirement, at least one, and this did not change from the original code, at least one off-street parking space in addition to the minimum required off-street parking for the primary dwelling. So that's in this recommendation, to leave that parking alone.
Mm-hmm.
So on page one where you were talking about accessory structures shall be complementary to the basic architectural structure.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it should be.
Okay, the aesthetic and...
Right.
Right.
I mean, you don't want something... People are going to build something that doesn't even go with...
Well, you've got pictures. What came to my mind when, mm-hmm, we were up in Alaska last summer, and did you see that picture?
Yeah.
There is... Where were we? What?
I cannot remember who was driving or what was doing.
Fairbanks. Fairbanks. So we're, yeah, it was because we're going to go on the paddle boat. So we're driving down the road, and here is an old, it was a bar, some kind of a commercial type building. Somebody moved in an old double wide mobile home and put it on top.
Well, it started out, they put it on the side, but it was encroaching on the property line.
So they put it on top.
So they just took two cranes and put it on top of this building that was formerly a restaurant bar.
And it was basically
dwelling unit.
To which we both responded, we want a code against that.
No. Stacking.
We don't want any of that budget.
But, you know, when I drive around, I mean, the big thing in our city, most of our lots are pretty small.
Yeah.
I think. Now, there's some very large ones around Lake Sawyer, especially more on the west side. And I can see a two-car garage with an accessory dwelling unit above or converting a basement into an accessory dwelling unit. I just don't understand why you would do the extra.
A separate
building with multiple, maybe it's two separate ADUs in one building. Don't do the garage, you just do two ADUs.
We didn't talk about that. That's a different configuration.
Well, I mean, if you're talking three, that's possible. That would be a possibility.
They could build a two-story structure. And
you know, the owner-occupied, I started thinking about that too, because personally it kind of bugs me. We've got rental houses all over the place within King County. I don't know how many we have here in the city, but the thing is that you don't have owner-occupied rental houses. You know, you rent out to somebody. And so...
Yeah. So first of all, how does the council feel about the elimination of the owner-occupied requirement? There's a lot of people that you know, the Planning Commission ended up feeling like we shouldn't be... concerned with that, but then there's some people that think that if there's an owner on site, then the proper, you know, there's sort of this two.
So where do we draw a line between a non-owner occupied multi-unit ADU and an apartment complex
or duplex
or something? Right. I don't think we can make that requirement.
About the owner occupancy.
Yeah, I don't think we can make the requirement about the owner occupancy.
Is there an assumption that an owner is going to take better care of his property than a renter?
That's an assumption.
That happens, that doesn't happen.
Did you have people come in, because I haven't listened to the audio for their, that came in and said, you know, I'll just put my house, you know, that I no longer want to live there, but I want to make each level to be able to rent it out. So I'm going to apply for this, and I'm going to make, you know, the upstairs part, one kitchen and a living area with two bedrooms and an extra bathroom. And I'm going to make the basement a living area with three bedrooms and a bathroom and a kitchen. But I'm going to move out, and that's what it turned into.
See, and I think that you make a really good argument for just allowing the one internal, because what would happen there is that you would the distinction between, like, well, really now it's a triplex,
right?
And a triplex isn't allowed in the R4, you know. So I think that makes a really, in terms of the administration part of this, one interior is not going to create that situation where you have. So, you know, you kind of might be creating a duplex, I guess, if you rent both of them out, but then duplexes are allowed in.
What about remember we talked about the empty nesters, right?
Yeah.
They got a big house. Maybe it has a basement apartment in it, right?
Yep.
Well, the kids are all gone, right? They were going to build a little ADU, a guest house, right?
Yeah.
Move into the guest house and rent out both of the units in the primary.
And I could actually do that. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what I could say right now. Yeah. I move out, I change all of my floors into an ADU.
Yeah. So if you have it limited to the one primary structure and then the one basement apartment, and they're both end up being rented out, then really what you have is a duplex.
So I personally think somebody needs to, the homeowner needs to live there before you turn it all into
rentals.
Rentals.
I don't know. You know, I mean,
then
duplexes
are
allowed in the underlying.
Then you get away from rental houses, right?
Well, and it's no, but it's no having to apply for put an apartment. You can't have an apartment in there, but if you build a house, there's your apartment.
Well, a duplex. A duplex would be allowed.
Years ago, I lived in Yakima. I rented a little itty bitty studio that was in one of the great big houses in downtown Yakima that they had just cut it in quarters, and there were two apartments downstairs and two apartments upstairs. Everybody had bathrooms and cooking facilities, but it was a single house.
Yeah, that's,
and the owner
that's very common back east, right?
Yeah.
They take a lot of these big old Victorian houses.
Well,
or,
you know, Bellingham does it.
Yeah,
those houses all turn. They look horrible, but they all got.
Well, up in Snohomish County, it's pretty common, right?
Washington.
It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but what we need to do is be able to control that in some way.
Yeah, and that's why I think that.
But how do you do
my,
that?
From my perspective, if so, if you end up with two in the original house footprint. Yes, it's a duplex, but it doesn't. It's still consistent with the zoning because we do outright allow duplex in the R4 and the R6. Mm-hmm. We don't allow triplex, so that's kind of where I think we might want to draw the line.
I think, and I also think because we're saying that if you have an ADU internal, you only get one external, right?
Right.
Right. So I think that kind of limits it from.
I think that's. Not a bad idea.
So if you have two ADUs
that way they don't
inside, you have two
chop the house up into three apartments
no.
and then build two little mini houses out back.
Nope,
right?
You can only have, so the way this is structured is you can only have the one detached.
And we still have
impermeable
percentage requirement, right?
Yeah. So,
they can't cover the, even if they were within the setbacks, right, they couldn't cover the whole backyard with multiple tiny
they're
houses.
They're still going to have to meet their setbacks and
they can't.
And the building coverage for the underlying zone. So that kind of sets some parameters. And they can only have one.
Right.
Detached.
And I guess, you know, as far as, you know, when I said I think somebody, that the homeowner should live there, but let's just say that the homeowner then sells, and they sell it to somebody that's just going to rent the house out. So the new owner now has three rentals or two rentals. So you can't say that they have to live there, right?
Right.
And so.
Well, then use your dad's house as an example. If at some point they opted to move out.
Well, somebody would use it.
You could go ahead and rent out the two levels.
Right. Okay.
You know.
So if a triplex isn't allowed, then why would you allow two accessory dwelling units in a house?
Well, that's why I'm saying you wouldn't. That in my one inside.
And one outside.
Yeah, because what could happen is that original house could be turned into a duplex with two. With the one, if we say you can have one attached, one internal ADU, and one detached, external.
Because otherwise you were creating a triplex.
Right, exactly.
And it's not code.
Right. And that's what it's, and what it's saying here on what page is number 3B, two attached ADUs may be allowed within the existing building footprint, no more than one ADU resulting from new construction. I think that two needs to go back down to one.
Mm-hmm. So, quickly, to go back to my first question.
Yeah.
I don't know how we got all the way up here.
Yeah.
Where I said I want like to keep it to where the building that they build is complementary to the character of their house.
Yeah.
So if you strike that, does that mean, you know, like back to my parents who built their house, they had to build it in character to Old Town.
Yeah.
So does that then strike them if they were to build, you know, they got another lot on their property. They got a couple of outbuildings and they technically turn into an ADU. So that would then strike it out that they wouldn't have to go by that? Or is there certain people in the city that have to go by different rules?
Are they in a certain zone? Are they in a historical zone or something?
Yeah. Well, that's what this, so what both of these chapters do is they include, they link it to the design guidelines. So that if you're in the town center, we have these, you know, we have the design guidelines that we've adopted for certain areas. So if you weren't in the town center, you know, the old town and you wouldn't have to comply with those design standards.
So my point is that when we're saying, well, we can't really tell them they have to build it to a certain character of what they have, we are technically already doing that in the city of Black Diamond.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's not too far-fetched to say that you should build your building in character of what's already on your property.
Right. And it was, and like I said, we were all in agreement about that for the accessory structures. But then when we started discussing the accessory dwelling unit, then people started to sort of feel like, oh, you know, you can, you know, because the way that this code read and many codes do, it's like, well, you got to have the same pitch, you got to have similar siding.
It might be hard to do that.
And things like that. And then people, that's that idea about the visual compatibility and making it match sort of started to fall apart. Because,
well, I think once you get into the planning part and you get your architecture, architect person designing all that, they then go in and say, okay, well, we can't do whatever, like a high pitched right here, but we can do this to complement this.
Yeah.
Because that's what the city's asking.
Yeah.
I mean,
what's the difference between me building a house right next door that doesn't match the house next door?
Well, let's look at
that's what
these.
I'm saying. I'm saying we shouldn't push the
but
fact.
That's what we're doing in Old Town. We're telling people.
That's a zone, though. That's a zone, though.
But you don't want, if you look in the picture,
let's look at these pictures. Yeah.
You don't want next to your old fashioned craftsman or some of our old mining houses, this three-story whatever. Yeah. Or then you go to the next page,
but
the little Cape Cod, and then you've got this ultra-modern right next to it. Now, you may have that in different parts of the city with new construction because of the way that people are building houses these days. But if it's your accessory dwelling unit on your property, it should be a similar style as your original construction, right. I think.
I disagree. I think if we're going to let the guy next door to you build something that's different, why is a building between the two buildings any different?
Have you driven up on 85th in the Greenwood area?
Yeah.
And it's all old historic homes, and then there's this ultra-modern monstrosity.
Well, it's just like an Edmonds, right? Driving along the water in Edmonds, right? And it looks just like this, right? You've got these old houses and you've got brand new houses next to it.
It's an aesthetic thing.
But then why, you know, I mean, I just think that it should look aesthetically pleasing as your house that you're in. If you're putting all this money in to build an accessory dwelling unit, I'm assuming your house is pretty nice already, right? You're not putting it in to build
your
house
building
nice.
But what if you purposely want it to contrast or to be a different style, right? So let's say if you wanted it not to match the style of your house because it is an accessory dwelling unit, right? It's not an addition, right? You want it to look different. What if you want a different type of construction? Let's say containers, right? Containers are huge, right? Cargo texture is a huge thing. They're building coffee shops out of them.
They're so ugly.
So, no, I've seen some really nice ones, right? I mean, the people do some really interesting designs, right? That alone, they're a pretty neat-looking building, right? Next to the house that is a typical build, it's different. It's not wrong, right? So it's kind of a, what if I want my accessory dwelling unit to contrast, right?
It's really subjective. I mean, it really comes down to, kind of this idea about diversity in the housing and wanting to have sort of an, I mean, it's how do we want to look? How do we want the city to be eclectic?
Wouldn't pass anyway because it's tall.
1,000 square feet.
Well, and it wouldn't pass because it's three stories.
Yeah.
Right.
So that one wouldn't work. But I think we need to go back and figure out how many ADUs we're going to have.
Yeah.
Because if you allow 2 ADUs in a regular residence and it could turn into a triplex, then it would violate the code. So I think that's what we need to look at. What violates the code? If it violates the code, you don't want to potentially put yourself in a position of having a triplex on a lot that doesn't allow it.
Right, and there's the density thing, too. It's like, how dense do you really want? You know, the accessory dwelling unit is not counted at like density, like the R4, four units per. This is sort of a an accept, there you go. It's almost like a free card, you know, where we want to provide opportunity for families to come back and be able to live and
do that nuclear family thing, right?
Start our home.
So it's basically a variant, and we have that idea of having it be for families, but it might not be.
It could provide,
it might be just a lower affordable house for
Well, and that could be a supplemental income.
That's in the intent statement also.
Well, my next question, too, is how many people are coming to the city and asking?
I was just going to ask that.
Because I know we have one resident that's very, very interested in this.
We've had two. We've had two that we've kind of...
Pam McCain, who's on the planning commission, was interested in building an ADU.
Yep.
And she is building it. Right?
She's waiting until
she's waiting for this,
until the council.
Because
she'll have to change. Well, she can't right now because she's got a single story house and she can't do what she wants to do. And so if we don't, you know, whatever the decision is, she's just kind of waiting until she submits her application.
Inconsistent. When you drive on the west side of Lake Sawyer, you see accessory dwelling units that are twice the height of the original cabins that were on the lake.
Right.
So something's happened over the years.
Yeah.
Because to me, there's not great big huge lots here where you can have enough property to build a 1,000-square-foot dwelling.
Well, it's up to. I mean, you don't have to.
Yeah, I know.
It's up to. Because the 800 was for some people, and we do have some big lots, too. And the 800 for some people was a real deterrent because they're like, you know, I don't think we can live in 800 square feet. But 1,000
square feet, you can put in a two-bedroom, bath and a half or whatever, and have a
decent living space. And have it be ADU also.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you've got to have space for that ADU.
Right.
I mean, not ADU, the... disabilities.
Right, the ADA.
The ADA, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
So what I'm think what I'm hearing is consensus, I think, that there would be one allowed that would be in attached and one detached.
Correct.
That you were okay with the two?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that brings us back to the question, is are we going to have the resident who owns the building or the property owner in that facility, in that house?
Or are we going to just get rid of the owner occupancy requirement?
That might affect the redwelling.
Well, no, you only can build one accessory dwelling unit at the house. It doesn't matter what.
Okay.
So we could.
Well, no, you could build two. You could build one in the house and one external to the house.
Right.
So I'm just saying, if I'm a landowner,
what the planning commission said was two in the house and one external, but that would could turn that house into a triplex,
which is not legal.
So if I'm a landowner right now and I want to build
a
house,
fourplex if they build an external
and a
too.
Detached garage with a living area in it, I could, if this was passed, right?
Okay, I'm sorry, say that again.
So if this passed and I have an empty lot that I was just going to be able to build one house before this passed, but now I know that I could build a house with two separate living areas, and I could build a garage with a living quarters. Now I've got two pieces of property, or three technically, on my lot that I can rent. Right? I could
technically,
do that.
Technically, with the way this is written now.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Like you could take your basement, put two apartments in it, and build one.
Yeah.
In the backyard, above the garage or wherever, right?
I think I'm hearing you say that you want your main level. So if I right now I own a house, I have a kitchen, I have a whole living area that I could do, and then I go and build another kitchen, and I've got that. So I'm just saying it'd be two rentals in a house,
but we're just
and
saying
one.
Two in the main house, two living spaces.
But yeah, we're
and
saying you couldn't
detached.
Do that second
not
one inside.
So you can only have the one kitchen.
Yeah.
And then build them.
But
two kitchens total.
You can still have two kitchens. If you've got your main living space and your second floor, which is your house you live in, then you have your accessory dwelling unit, which is the basement with the full kitchen and all of that. You could still do
one
another accessory dwelling unit
external.
External.
Isn't that what you're saying? Yeah. So well, we have
you just couldn't cut the basement into two apartments.
Is that what you're saying? Or were you still saying that you could potentially have three inside your
apartment? No, okay. So the two.
Yeah.
The main one that I have right now.
Yeah.
And then I go build
for,
kitchen
for
and
a total of three dwelling
units. And then I build one
units.
Outside.
Yes.
I've got three units I can rent.
So then we run into the triplex
rent,
issue.
But that doesn't change the designation of your main living space as a main living space.
You living in the house.
So you would have one ADU in your basement, and then you'd
that's
have your
rentals.
It'd be three rentals.
No, but still.
Right. Yeah. Well,
but,
because we'd look at that detached one differently. I mean, you know, because you're not having, if it were, so with a triplex, you know, you've got three.
Do we define a triplex as three attached units?
Yeah.
Okay, and that's fine.
Because otherwise it gets into that cottage housing thing
that
we talked about. Yeah, okay. So I think we resolved that, and I think did we say we're okay without having the owner occupancy?
I think so.
Or did we resolve that?
I think it's
the owners to live there in the neighborhood, but I don't think we can regulate.
Okay.
There's a difference between what we'd like and what we really should tell people.
Right.
But then back to the design.
That's the one thing that we haven't resolved.
I think that should
is how much regulation do we?
They've already have.
See, I feel differently. I feel like, you know, if someone wants to express their, you know, design or whatnot outside of what their footprint is of their regular house, then they could be able to, it depends if it meets in the code.
It has to meet the
design standard is what really dictates.
Right.
Yeah.
Unless it's in the city already zoned for a particular type of design and built, and that is a little bit different, I feel.
That would be treated,
I mean, it's expression of what you like and how you want to build it and how it's, what the people want, the property want. You know what I mean? Because I like little tiny homes. If I had property, I'd put a tiny home in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't meet the design of my home.
Yeah.
But I would definitely think that would be a good income for if I had my daughter move back or, you know, an elder family member that would need something. I don't know.
Wrap this up because we're running out of time. Mm-hmm. So what are the questions we need?
So the only question now is the visual compatibility. Do we want to add back in that it has to in the review it has to pass that visual compatibility and the aesthetic of, well, you know, it should kind of look like the primary house. That's where we're. That's the
it
last.
It should be aesthetically
thing.
Pleasing.
But I'm hearing
measure. Yeah, but that's,
how do you
art
measure
is
that?
In the eye of the beholder, right?
I know.
So what's
no,
aesthetic to you may not be aesthetic to her. It's really.
Sorry.
I mean, because I mean, aesthetics is.
Well, you go back to like the container-looking buildings and stuff. I think those are just some of the ugliest things ever created. But if somebody
but
wanted
I think
to put
really
one next
cool
door,
looking.
I'd strangle her.
Because like I looked at I've seen some that they make look like a caboose, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be really
kind of cool,
right?
Very
but
cool.
It doesn't match my house.
Well, I think
so,
that if it's not in a restrictive zone,
right?
That somebody could move next door to me tomorrow and tear the house down and build
anything they want. That's
yep.
true.
Yeah.
Yep. So I don't think that you should restrict somebody.
Not everywhere. Our design,
But it's
we've got commercial design standards. We've got the 10 Trails has it. We have the Old Town area that has design standards. Their design standards don't cover all of the, and we don't have any that cover around the lake.
No.
So it's kind of
like
certain areas.
It's not cookie cutter.
Yeah. So it would, yeah. So yes.
We can still talk about this.
And I think too,
for that part.
If somebody's going to go to the expense of building an accessory dwelling unit, whether they're going to rent it out or family member, they're still going to want it to look nice on their property because
right.
they still own the property.
Uh-huh.
So, I guess.
Then it's got to be within code, right? It's not going to be falling down or unsafe.
It does have to be the code.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I would like to do, though, is I will make those changes, and then I guess we need to get this on a regular council agenda for
the next meeting.
And then you'll have the code to talk about, and then we'll want to hold a public hearing. Are you comfortable holding a public hearing at the same, reviewing it, having a discussion, and then going into a public hearing at your next meeting, or do you want to spend more time with it?
Probably a little more time with it.
Okay.
So
And I won't be here for the meeting on the 21st. Okay. Today's the 7th.
But we could, I think, in the case of this one where there's a lot that we really need to digest still,
yeah.
Let's get the information out to the public right. As quickly as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Let's hold the public hearing and then do maybe formal adoption at the first meeting in March.
I don't know about March. That's pretty quick.
So there's not enough time to do a public hearing at the
February. How much time is it? Oh, okay. Oh, you need
so we notice. So
maybe by this,
April.
All right.
So we would be March 7th, you would have you would be on your agenda for a meeting. And then we'd schedule hearing the 21st. If
well, do we need
on your schedule for the 21st and have the hearing on March 7th?
Oh yeah, you could hold the hearing first, which actually I think
why don't
is kind of helpful.
I think the hearing.
Yeah, we want to hear what the public thinks.
You'll have it on your the council agenda the 21st, and then hold the public hearing on March 7th.
February. Do we have time for me to get this to you? Yeah, February 21st.
Yeah,
you're saying. Okay, so February 21st, it's going to be on the agenda, and then the hearing would be set for March 7th. Okay.
Okay,
that works.
Thank you.
So moved.
Second.
All right.
And I just wanted to let all the council members know that Erica Dial from the chair.